This is Rackabix After Hours.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Weird welcome there. Rack Addicts After Hours, it's another one. It's close to the festive period. We hope you're having hopefully more relaxing than our days have been recently. Since it's the end of the year, we're going to do a little bit of a 2019 roundup. What was your first idea, Pete? We were going to do just 2019, a purchase that has been made the year in some way. Have you got one lined up? I've got one ready to go. What do you reckon, Pete? What have you got?
Yeah, I was thinking of a top purchase that I've made this year, a piece of equipment. I would say for myself, the most significant thing is that I bought several, in fact, more than one, the Pioneer Torres, the AS1.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Which is a collaboration between Dave Smith and Pioneer. And effectively, it is a single voice from a Prophet 6.
I had it in my head that it was one of the digital ones from like a Prophet 12. That's why I didn't care about it.
No.
So I've been sleeping on it and not really. Oh, no.
Yeah, so it's a full analog. It's
okay.
A full everything. And
what an idiot.
So it's the complete thing. You don't get, you get very little control surface. You just get the basics. Everything else can be accessed through a menu, or if you go and spend some little extra cash by the Sound Tower plugin, you can control it via that, which will give you the whole control surface that you'd expect to see on a Prophet 6.
Okay, can you dig in and get all the nitty-gritty via menus? It's just not on the front panel that you...
You can get everything that you need. On the front panel, you have some basic stuff. You have filter cutoff, resonance... low pass filter and a few other bits and pieces, but just the minimum you need to do to control it, because it's really aimed at DJs, and it's supposed to be possibly an accompaniment to CDJs or some other kind of decks that you've got on the go.
But
I'm using them in a different context. I'm using them within a rig.
Live system.
But it is effectively a full analog system in a very small...
So you've made a Prophet too.
Yeah, you could put it in that term. So although it's the Prophet 6, it's kind of got related. It's almost like a Pro 1.
Oh yeah,
in some respects.
What are your plans for kind of using that? I know your live system. You've got, is it two guitar compressor pedals?
Yeah, so on the system, it's quite a large pedal board. I've got two of the AS1s. Two of those, they run through a stereo compressor, but separately, so they've both got a stereo compressor just to give them a bit more, tighten them up, give them a bit more punch. And then one of them goes through a delay, which is the Nemesis delay, and the other one goes through a reverb, just so that it changes them up a bit, so they've got slightly different flavour to the effects. They have got built-in effects themselves. They're okay, but they're pretty much the same effects that you get with the... Prophet 6.
Oh yeah,
which are okay, but they're nothing to necessarily write home about. So to give that extra depth, I've put these two stereo effects on there. So it's quite a nice setup.
Is this system kind of my fault? Because I asked you to do a little live set at the Modular Cafe, and it's been brewing, and I'm really excited to see this unleashed.
Yes,
really going really deep into the Digitact for a good while. As the brain
of
the
thing. That,
Is that still happening?
Yeah, so the Digitac is the clock and the brain, so the primary trigger for everything. And then the way it's... via MIDI, everything else is MIDI linked. So the Digitac sends MIDI, various sets of MIDI information out to the two Torreses. And then I've also got the stereo effects processors or stereo effects pedals attached to MIDI, but I haven't delved into the brains of those yet.
Oh yeah, but switching presets for different tunes.
Yes, to a degree. I mean, I think in a live scenario, the both pedals. So as I said earlier, I've got the two Source Audio pedals. Mm. As I say, I've got the Nemesis delay and the Ventress reverb. They're both pretty much same physical, and they both got MIDI in and MIDI out. So the idea is that eventually I'll be able to control them using MIDI. But they've also both got four presets that you can set up with a little sort of momentum button switch that you can press, and it just skips it along between the presets. So potentially I could just skip those along in a live scenario, because there'll be enough sort of difference between at least four presets to cover a whole, you know, short set, I would imagine.
Well, the Modular Cafe is ready. You've just got to let us know when you are.
Yes, that is always the problem. As I've said to you previously, I don't want it to be shit, to be honest. So it's producing something that's for adequate standard or entertaining entertainment value.
Yeah, we definitely get a real mix. All of them thoroughly enjoyable, but we've had some incredibly polished kind of performances. We've had some people doing their first ever live performance of any kind, some really weird experimental stuff, some really strange sort of laptop based coding type things, lots of cool stuff. Everything,
I mean, it may be the case,
any sound you could imagine,
any
the
sounds
sound. Of it,
and
I think it's a book. I can't remember, it is definitely a book. I can't remember
what any sound you can imagine.
Yeah, you must.
Matt's MSP probably.
Well, yeah, the one I was talking about was all Pure Data type stuff.
Yeah.
However, it may be the case that it will be a modular setup that I actually bring to the Modular Cafe first time.
Yes.
Which just completely voids the whole.
Yeah, because I am just about to embark on some small 84 by 2 row HP.
Oh, the skiffs that you've been sitting on for like 6 months.
In fact, straight after the podcast, I'm straight over to hook up with some colleagues for a bit of a Christmas bash, and one of those guys is over from Bulgaria at the moment, and he needs a small skiff to move some stuff over back to Bulgaria with him. So he'll be removing that from his large case and going there, but we have to build the cases first, and we've got 3 days to do it. It's a bit like a time team challenge.
Scrap Heap challenge. I'll miss that TV show. Anyway, so, yeah, live system. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait for it to happen. No pressure at all.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I don't feel it at all.
Years in the making.
Yeah. Good. Andrew, what have you bought that's been amazing? A whole of 2019 to pick through.
Yeah, on the surface, that, you know, there's been some really, really interesting ones. Investing in the studio with some of the mastering equipment's been really, really cool. But one of the most interesting standout ones that I came across, believe it or not, is clocking cables.
What?
Yeah.
I was not expecting that.
I know.
What, like word clock, just like BNC
that's
stuff?
That's it. Yeah, yeah. So from the studio, we go from Universal Audio, from those where we do all of our tracking in, and we send all of our effects to and from and et cetera. And that all feeds into a Pure 2, which is the sort of final conversion before it comes out of the speakers. Syncing those up to the Universal Audio, you would not believe the difference that it made in terms of clarity. For the price, I think, of 3 cables came to about £30. And it's one of those things you could spend as much as you kind of like on it. And I'd be really interested to see, you know, had we put more money into it, you know, the quality difference. But just putting it in straight away, being able to sync up the clocks, it made such a difference. So the overall clarity and the tightness and the punch that you were getting through your tracks after that. So, yeah, that slightly odd one, you know, in a year that's been filled up with
cool
Mazalek and Dave Hill and everything like that. But the one that really stands out to me that made a big, big difference was having everything synced up together.
No way.
Yeah, it's such a big deal. I'm so converted to it.
That's really cool. They're converted. He's making puns.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. One of our old colleagues who now works at Metropolis is one of their kind of tech people who's currently neck deep in I think a Neve desk. He's like recapping
Neve. Yeah, from what I saw, he was working on the 1073.
Yeah, but he showed me a video, a YouTube video. I can't remember what company it was. Somebody's really famous for their clocks that isn't Antelope. I don't know if they're clocking
May have actually been Cransong.
Cransong? Or was it Cransong? Yeah. I don't know. I think it was a video of theirs, but this was obviously YouTube video, so the audio is going to be pretty rubbish anyway. Yeah. But you could still hear it. It was just without clock and then synced up to this really
I'm waiting on a Cransong converter to come through if he ever builds them. Dave Hill, if you are listening, and I can't imagine why, please just fucking make it.
Yeah. I'd really recommend checking out this kind of video.
Waiting on Nam.
Yeah.
To find out, you know, I'm really hoping for that announcement. It's like, oh, by the way, happy surprise.
Yeah.
All of our back orders are being filled in.
Yeah.
Because at the minute, it's like, I'm calling up my supplier and it's just like, oh, you know, what are we doing? And it's like, I have no idea. You know, I have no idea. Why are you calling me? It's like, roles reversed.
One day.
From the usual.
I never expected that kind of difference. There was so much more depth and it was actually, it just felt so much wider.
Yeah, it's kind of these mixes three-dimensionalizes everything. Once you start clocking properly, it really does. It makes a hell of a difference to the overall sound. And when you're doing a mix, I mean, it's between that, the two things, moving from a sort of home environment to a studio environment, have been summing. So using a Danger Bus, 2 bus plus, to do the to sum out all of the tracks in an analog way. That gives you, you know, a lovely amount of headroom to be able to play with. And then clocking it, like, tightens everything up. It adds punch and gives those three dimensions. And that now going from, you know, if I went back to a sort of home setup, that would be the instantly it's like, yeah, fine, you've got to go, but you can take away one piece of gear. It would be either that converter or that summing mixer. Because it's just so good. It just makes such a difference to the amount of headroom you can get out of tracks. And
from my understanding of clocking, let's say you're a home studio person, you've got an Apollo Twin, Universal Audio. You've just got that one device doing all your ins, your outs, your everything.
Yeah.
It's only when you add another digital device somewhere into the workflow that you need it to be clocked properly.
Do you want it to be synced up properly? Exactly.
So in your case, that's quite obviously you've got conversion in quite a few places. You need them to be working nicely. If someone is kind of starting from a really nice interface like an Apollo Twin, when are they first going to encounter that stage where they're like, actually, if I clock these properly, I would see an improvement? Because it's more obvious in a big studio. But
yeah, it would probably be from the point where, you know, if you decided that A to D, D to A, a dedicated analog to digital converter that you wanted to get involved in, that's where you'd start syncing up the clock, which is essentially what we do, but on a slightly larger scale, because it's, you know, we're running three different racks then into a converter.
Yeah.
So by syncing all three of those racks up to that one dedicated clock, it's one of those things. It's one of those things that run away,
leave now and never come back. A small podcast invasion there.
It's one of those things that when you start when you start adding all of those different bits, and this is the point I was going to make. It's You can go into a stupid amount of depth with all of this stuff. And, you know, people will be the first, and I was certainly the first one to go, it's like, oh, yeah, but if I change that, how much of a difference is it really going to make? Is it going to be noticeable? It's like the easiest example I can think of is if you have your monitors on the desk or if you put them on dedicated foam pads and stuff like that. It's like, oh, why? I can't immediately hear a difference. But it's taking that principle and expanding it. And by putting in all of those little bits and building upon it, you all will then make the big difference.
Yeah.
That's when the big change comes in.
The difficulty, I suppose, then is you can't A-B. If you're slowly building up a studio, you're going to add some treatment. You're going to set up your monitors properly, maybe get some room correction or something.
I mean, you say that, but surely what you're outputting then is hopefully going to sound, you know, you're going to notice the difference as you go through. Once you're able to properly start referencing your mixes, once you're able to start...
Oh, you notice your work just getting better.
Your work gets better. I don't think, you know, a good piece of work is a good piece of work, but there are certainly things that can help it along. I'm not a massive subscriber into the, you know, the argument that the gear that you have necessarily makes you a better, you know, mixer or a better whatever, but there are certainly tools that can help. And if you're already kind of at that point where you're expanding on, your life is just being made easier with it, because you're able to reference reference properly. I think, you know, doing the mastering, I can tell pretty quickly when someone's, you know, sent in a track and they've done it in an untreated room through 5-inch cones, because the bass is all over the place, and that, you know, that's where the benefit of, you know, using the mastering comes in, because I can reference that kind of thing and I can help kind of clear it up. But, you know, ideally when you're getting to a mix, you kind of want, you know, someone like myself to turn around and go,
you should have done this better earlier.
No. Or I was going to say, ideally, you just want it to get to the point where it's like, I'd feel bad charging them. There's literally nothing that needs to be done. Do you know what I mean? That's what you should be kind of striving toward.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, some people do it. And I've certainly come across, you know, people like Andy Sheps. You know, his mixes are already there by the time, half the time by the, before they get to mastering. That's the level that you want to kind of get to, and it's all of those little things, I think, that really help being able to reference properly, having things synced up. It just, it does make a difference.
So you're telling me my life should be dedicated to giving my mastering engineer less work?
Yeah.
Amazing. There we go.
Yeah, because you've already done it. You know, you're already kind of at that job. I mean, that's not to say that it's necessarily a bad idea to kind of send anything, because beautiful part of this whole process is collaboration and being able to get someone to filter through on ideas that you wouldn't necessarily have had, or go about things in a different way. You don't want to be locked in your bubble, but equally it really helps to, you know, to you know, push it, take it as far as you can possibly get it, and then you're on your way. But in a really roundabout way, yeah, word clocks.
clock from, your stuff.
From £30 Spitif purchase to a philosophical breakthrough.
There we go.
That's probably what I would say. Nice. How about one. Yourself? What's the best purchase you've made?
I had a bit of an odyssey with the OPZ, the Teenage Engineering one. So that was announced ages ago, and I think we touched on this in a previous episode, but it turned up and people had no idea what it was, because the Teenage Engineering just weren't explaining it very well, and I didn't care. and then when it actually was sort of a few months away from hitting shops and things, they said, okay, there's going to be, it's a 16-track MIDI sequencer, it can do all this cool stuff, lighting, and there's going to be this module that has CV and gate and MIDI out, and it's a teeny tiny little box that you can take with you everywhere. The problem I was trying to solve at the time is, if I write music, it will be because I had this one idea in this one place and I just happened to be near to a form of kind of expressing it. So it might have been one of my favorite tunes that I've made. I went to jam with a friend who's a classical piano player, and he composes for video game soundtracks. And we were just dicking around with the modular, and he was jamming on the piano, and it was just a really inspiring day. I got home and just immediately made some stuff on the modular. It took me about an hour, made this cool track. I was like, wow, that's never happened before. So I just wanted to make sure I could capitalize on any small nuggets of inspiration I have had. So I was like, okay, cool, this can be with me everywhere. Whatever, that's cool. In principle, it works. It's got drum sequencing. It's got melodic parts. And my theory was, I can use this MIDI adapter to then chain better sound engines, because, to be honest, the built-in sounds on the OPZ are just the worst. Mm-hmm. They sound awful. There's one sort of electric piano-y thing, which is kind of cool. There's something that sounds a bit like a double bass, which is also fine. The rest is unusable garbage. It's pointless. I hate it. And I still hate it. Mm-hmm. But at one point, I was going to sell my OPZ, but I still haven't. The MIDI adapter was also a nightmare. I ended up kind of taking sort of personal responsibility with this, kind of sorting out the customers that we were dealing with, because the first batch came out and there was this little latch. You kind of open up the back of the OPZ, little yellow square. You pop it in, you lock this latch thing, and you're good to go. You've got CV in gate, there's stereo cable, so you can get expression and all this kind of stuff, and aftertouch or whatever, and there's MIDI in and out. And you locked them in, you switched the little tab, you closed up the back, you put it on the table, and the little module immediately popped out and nothing worked. And that was happening to everyone.
Yeah,
people
I
on the
remember,
forums
yeah.
going, oh, it's not working, it doesn't stay latched in. And people were wedging the switch by cutting little bits of plastic and sellotaping them in. And I think we must have sold, it wasn't massive amounts, maybe 10 people bought them the first time round. They all came back. And so I personally tested those with my OPZ to verify the faults, see if there was a solution, and then ended up just testing all of the new ones that came in myself. The second batch were all broken in exactly the same way. And I was so annoyed by this whole process that I was just really kind of giving up on the thing. They eventually fixed it. They never publicly acknowledged that anything happened.
Oh.
And it was just kind of the worst thing in the world. But they work now. They stay latched into the thing. And it now just completely controls the whole live system, which is really cool. And now I can actually keep the thing charged while I'm using it, because otherwise I'd have to work on battery power, which, if you're in a live situation, that's just the most stressful thing ever. But now it works, and I'm kind of happy with it. And there's been a curse. Working in retail, working in music retail, I've been just absolutely hating the world of synthesizers, not making any music, all this kind of stuff. But recently, I did about an hour. I made some tracks. The OPZ was there making really cool tunes, and it's finally, I think it's been maybe four to six months. It's finally turning around, and I feel happy about it again. But it's been a roller coaster of emotions with this stupid little grey slab. But that's finally coming around, and I'm actually seeing the opportunities. And we were talking about the OP1 as well. That's been here, what do we say, 8 years? It's been out for 8 years, and it's really grown in that time. So I think I'm going to be in it for the long run, seeing how the OPZ develops. I am hopeful, but also very, very scared. Teenage Engineering, please don't make me waste my money. So that's it. I think that's the best purchase I've made in terms of learning experience, and I am really hopeful for it. I'm still kind of worried. I think we're also going to go off our favorite release of 2019.
Track-wise.
Well, it could be. It could be a product. It could be just something new that has been released that you might not necessarily own. Might not be a thing. So the OPZ wasn't mine. But what was yours, Pete? Your favourite new thing that is announced, happened, you've seen, that kind of thing?
I don't know. It's difficult to say. I could be really gauche and say the Moog One, just for its...
the big boy.
Through its audacity, what it is. But having had a good old play around with it, it's just it's all a bit too much. I mean, it is obviously a gargantuan beastie of a synth.
I don't find it very exciting.
No, yeah, I know what you mean. I don't. It's kind of it is what it is. But I don't feel any yearning to possess one.
No.
At all.
It seems like the Room Breaker, from what I've kind of heard. It's like you get that, and you don't really need much else.
You can't fit anything else.
Yeah, no, yeah, but I know, but that's kind of the point. Do you know what I mean? Because it's so large, it seems like they're kind of all in one.
Yeah, I mean,
thing.
As a sort of expressed to a lot of people, we're not sure if you could fit anything else into a mix with that thing.
You know,
being really fat
going
and
away,
dominating
maybe,
everything.
Yeah, end up using it for a little tinkly arpeggio here, but then why are you spending eight grand for a tinkly arpeggio that you could do on so many other more interesting synthesizers?
So potentially maybe the Matriarch.
Yeah,
the Matriarch.
I'm very
really
excited
cool.
about that.
Yeah.
I wish I could have one, but it's $2,000.
Yeah,
but that to me is possibly a lot more interesting, as possibly a future purchase lining up. And as we all know, I certainly get blow hot and cold about equipment, especially sort of being surrounded by it all day long. Sometimes it gets a bit...
I've struggled with that a lot.
Bit of cobbler's shoes going on there, so to speak. But, possibly the Matriarch. I can't think of anything else that I've been too enthralled with. I mean, as normal, there's been a lot of things released, but quite frankly, a lot of them just passed me by. Just going, another one of those.
Yeah,
yeah. I like the look of the. I think the Warm Audio 1073 came out really early this time last year. That was very cool because I'm quite a fan of Neve. So seeing that kind of replication on there. But I do know what you mean. It's one of the weird ones in the time that we're living, and a lot of stuff seems to be cloned. a lot of clones go on, and it's kind of like, you know, you get excited from the possibility of accessibility to the equipment that you wouldn't necessarily be able to use otherwise. But equally, it's like you've seen it all before, and you've kind of lusted after it, and then you kind of get to a point where the clone comes out, and it's like, they come through thick and fast.
So I suppose it's just a case of a selection of facsimiles. It's just how close are they to the original to warrant. I mean, I know there's a lot of massive cost saving to be had. Yeah. But what I mean.
But then again, I wonder. Sorry,
we've got
to interrupt.
A ban on the B word this episode.
Yeah. that's fine, because there are there's Clark Technic, which is slightly associated with the B word as well. I'm coming at it from a kind of audio outboard point of view. But what I mean to say is that, you know, an awful lot of people that are buying the clones, don't necessarily get a chance to use the originals anyway,
so they wouldn't know what they're missing.
They wouldn't know the difference. So you could try it out. In any case, I'm trying to think if I've had the opportunity to run a like for like. I think the only one that I've been able to do is the 1073, an 1176 between the real one, a warm audio one, and the plugin.
Plugins.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone's got an 1176 plugin.
And how did that pan out as a?
The thing that you got to remember with a lot of the 1176s and anything is that half the time they are hand built, and half the time they all had their own little kinks and.
Between various different ones. The one that was built on Wednesday versus the one that was built on Friday.
Or the one that was built by Gary, the one that was built by Bob. So, you know, to that degree, they've all got their own individual sounds in a very microscopic way. But, you know, there are people like Chris Lorgalgi that, you know, pride themselves on, oh, that's Bluey, that's the one that I use on vocals all the time because it just does something to it.
Those have got enough money to indulge and sort through various iterations and find the ones that really suit their production style. Now,
I think then when you get into clones, because to make them at the price level that they do, they are all mass-produced.
So
they come
off
the factory line, so they're all a little bit more kind of generic, which is fine because they're taking the essence of that. And to a degree, it's the same then with plugins, because obviously they're only going to model really off one or two 1073s or 1176s or 1073s, you know, so that everyone theoretically, you know, if you're using Universal Audio, everyone is using the exact same 1176, everyone else is using the exact same 1073. There's none of that little, you know, the engineer's touch on it,
yeah,
if you like.
Yeah, extra sort of
that,
special.
That little extra spice on it.
Whereas,
you know, I'm sure I've come across people that worked in studios before and it's like, oh yeah, we always put the bass through channel, you know, 17, because for some reason the EQ does this weird thing which makes it sound awesome, which is cool, and that's what you kind of end up missing out on with plugins to a degree. To go back to your original point, the difference between all of them was pretty much, I mean, there wasn't much to it, I'll be completely honest.
I was to invest, I mean, apart from being snooty about the original manufacturers, if I bought into something like Warm Audio, I wouldn't be losing a lot, if anything.
No, because it maintains the essence of the equipment, and most importantly, it maintains the workflow of it, which is really the most kind of important thing, I think, when it comes to using the difference between outboard and synthesizers. The difference between using outboard and plugins, in my opinion, is being able to look away from a computer screen, being able to look away from any kind of analysis and just sit down, bury your face in the equipment and just play with it.
Use your ears properly.
Yeah, use your ears until it sounds right.
That's why I like hardware synthesizers as well. Just not staring at the screen.
That's the kind of thing. You're not kind of like watching the, you know, on FabFilter, you're not watching the graphic representation of what it's all doing. You're not looking at what frequency cuts you out. You're just kind of sat there and you're twiddling it, and then, oh, okay, that sounds good. I mean, granted, compressors are a dangerous one because obviously you make something louder, it sounds better. But, you know, with EQ, same deal with EQ to a degree, but, you know, it definitely removes you out of some kind of element, and you're just kind of sat there with the equipment listening to the track and seeing what comes out. But the most important thing, I was watching it the other day, it was, I'll bring it back to the guy, Andy Sheps, doing a talk at the Oxford musicians thing club they do.
Oh yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, you know that one?
No, I'm joking. Okay.
Oh sorry, no, he did it at the it's like you know, they do the Oxford debates.
Yeah. No,
they're
really
cool.
Other things.
It was a similar one like that, but it was just basically a lecture that he did at Oxford that got broadcasted, and he was saying the most important thing is what comes out of the speakers. Everything after that is completely moot. You know what I mean? It doesn't make a difference how you do something or why you do something. All that matters is that what comes out of the speaker sounds good. If it sounds good, it sounds good. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It doesn't matter necessarily how you got to that end point. And then that's where I would kind of take it to, from the point of view of whether or not using a plugin, a clone, or a original. That, you know, you use what you've got and you get the best sound out of it. You can always make an excuse. Oh, I used a clone, so, you know, sorry, by the way, guys, the mix sucks. It's, you know, if I had $2,000 to spend on a Rode 1176 instead of just this little warm audio clone or this plugin, you know, the mix would have been brilliant and we wouldn't be disputing this. It's just like...
You do
the best with what you've got. You use it and, you know, you get the best sound out of the speakers, which brings me again back to what I was kind of saying with the... in the initial point, with, you know, all those little things making a big difference.
Yeah.
You can reference what you're kind of hearing. As long as you know that you've got a truthful representation of what's coming out of those speakers, it doesn't necessarily matter what equipment you're using to a degree. You just well, use it.
At the day, 99.9% of all your potential listeners don't give an absolute monkeys how it was made. They just how
laptop
it sounds.
Speakers,
I mean,
phone
out
speakers.
Out and out.
And also the quality of what they're listening on as well.
Yep. Sort
of.
My iPhone thing sounds completely shit at the minute. I was horrified when I played a mix through it. So, you know, I was having to reference on that. And it really baffles me. I don't know if my iPhone is particularly bad in terms of the speakers or whether or not it... excuse me. Or whether or not it's a question that, you know, all of them sound like that. But I couldn't imagine really listening to... you know, tracks day to day on that, but I'm spoiled with the headphones that I listen to and that kind of thing. But, you know, for the vast majority of things, the most important thing to a degree, and I'm not saying you should mix on this system or anything like that, but the most important reference that you can use nowadays is a set of Apple earbuds. If it doesn't sound
that
good on those...
makes me sad.
If it doesn't sound good on those, then there's no point. If you want people to listen to your music, I should
say.
Yeah,
of course.
Or if you want your music to be consumed in a, you know, a popular way. If it doesn't sound good on Apple earbuds, then there's really, you know, you're up against a losing battle anyway.
Mm.
And there is a knack to trying to get, you know, understand those speakers and how they work and how they replicate sound. But, you know, whenever
you haven't listened to them in ages.
No, exactly. But this is the thing. It's like if you...
You've got to know them.
You got to know them. It's the same principle with the old NS10s, isn't it? Mm. You know, they made those to
absolutely
replicate shitty DABs. And, you know, if even now I use NS10s and I can hear when a mix has been done on them because it sounds great. If it sounds great through the NS10s, it typically translates well through to most things. And I can always tell when a mix has been done on the NS10s because you listen to it and it doesn't kind of sound like like a regular track. It sounds really good through them. But it's the same principle with iPhone earbuds. You know, I reckon it would do a lot of people a lot of good just to have those constantly plugged in to a
extra headphone
system,
output
to
somewhere,
into a headphone output, and then just have them and just check. It's like, okay, yeah, it's all good still. Happy days.
Where do we start?
I don't actually know.
Your favorite release of 2019.
Release.
What was it?
I was saying the Warm Audio clone. That was the one that got me really excited. The 1073 clone. That was the one that got me really excited.
Oh yeah.
And then again, I got Philosophical. Philosophical.
Philosophical.
I can't even say it.
Amazing.
Yeah. So who's it?
It's my last one. What have we got? I've definitely been suffering from music retail fever. The curse. I just don't care about these things that I really once was really excited about. Like, oh, I remember before I worked in the kind of the industry, I was just like really excited about when the mini log came out. Oh, this is amazing. And I was really interested to get my hands on a Dope for Dark Energy 2, all that kind of stuff. And then just nothing for so long. The first thing to what's some weird gross phrase tickle my loins. I don't know. Something weird like that. The Expressive E Osmos, that really, I was actually genuinely really excited about it. I think that's what Rolly should have done ages ago. And I think it's actually going to do really well. It's pricey as all that, as anything, but I think that's the right way to go about a proper expressive instrument, and I hope it does well. And the retailer that we all work for, we stock Expressive E, and I really want to poke one when it's when it's here. Want to get my fleshy fingers
so
on it.
So many images. you're gonna filthy laugh to go with it.
Enjoy those images. But I reckon that's going to be a really important piece, because it's interesting. It's not just another monosynth that is. Oh, there's been so many of those. It's forward thinking. It's collaborative with Harkin Audio and Expressive E. I think it's genuinely going to be an important tool for a lot of pianists that do want to replicate fretless acoustic instruments, or just actually have a lot more expression than they've had access to before. Excited to see who uses that. I know the dude from Dream Theater's been on board with it, a bunch of other people. I personally don't like his playing, but it was that Cuckoo video that sold me on it. I think it's going to be massive.
Yeah, I don't dispute that it's interesting. The only thing I would dispute, I consider it more of a 2020 release, because, I mean, it's not physically, apart from a few prototypes.
It's a 2019 announcement.
Yes.
So that doesn't really count. Okay, if we're going to do with that... Oh, wait, no, my other one is also... It's a 2019 announcement, but I'll talk about it anyway. It's more of a philosophical thing, because it is just another analog monosynth, and it is kind of a clone that we've been talking about before as well. But it is it's a clone of an SH-101. We've never seen that before, have we? What's it called? The Superlative SB-1, which is, I think, basically what... an SH-101 would look like if Teenage Engineering designed it. So it's really thin.
Cool.
It's like milled from an aluminium block, and it's like 900 pounds or something really stupid. But I just love it. I desperately want it, just because from a design standpoint.
Does it do anything?
No, of course it doesn't. Wait, no, it's battery powered. But it doesn't do anything else.
So it's the original SH-101.
Was it?
Yes.
Does nothing new. But I really desperately want to touch it in very sensitive places.
Because the classic thing that went wrong with so many SH-101s was that
battery leakage.
People would leave the big old cells.
What were they, like D's or C's?
Yeah, they're the big sort of chunky torch ones. Type chunky cells. I can't remember which size. People would leave them in there. They would degrade. They would leak, and then they'd leak all inside.
Yeah.
All over the, depending which way up the thing was being stored. So if it had been stored like on its side,
of course,
it would go all over the electronics. Most of the time it would actually, because it's got a steel tray base.
If it's flat, it might be okay.
So it all pulled down in there and sort of just corrode the steel a bit and whatnot. But yeah, it was a bit of a thing. But it's effectively, an SH-101.
It is. It's just identical. It is rechargeable though.
Oh.
That's about all it does new. But... it's just one of those.
Does it have those? It's a design thing. So you can use it as a keytar.
No, thankfully it doesn't have that. It doesn't have guitar strap points. It's literally, I don't care about it from a synth standpoint. It's just not interesting to me at all.
But it's the aesthetic.
The aesthetic, the design. I'm really, really into it. I think it looks just the business. I will likely never see one, but
I'm slightly questioning the business model. Why design something that is very aesthetically pleasing to look at, but expensive? I mean, how many are they thinking they're going to sell?
I mean, I think it was crowdfunded, so I don't know how it's going to go. But it did really well because we're on Kickstarter. I'm just on my phone at the moment. I'm going to get the numbers on there. So this one, we had a goal of $101,000. 202 backers, it raised $177,785. So it looks like it will happen at some point. But here their taglines are, the SB-1 is the world's thinnest and first rechargeable analog synthesizer. I mean, cool, I guess. It's got 3340s in there, usual clony stuff.
Yeah, because
it's just design, that's what I'm about.
There's nothing that unique in the SH-101, hence why Behringer can copy it so easily. And
oh, wait. There's a 360-degree joystick. Aha!
And does that just replacing the
yeah, it looks like it. Oh no, I lied. No, there is a keytar attachment. No. Why? Oh, that makes me so sad. Oh well, yeah, just from a design standpoint.
But it does look pretty.
Cool.
It does look very pretty.
It's such a fickle thing. I just desire it from an aesthetic standpoint. That's basically it. In terms of actual releases, because I can't even think of anything.
If Apple made a synthesizer.
Exactly, Teenage Engineering. Apple made a synth. It's that kind of idea, isn't it?
Yeah. That's cool.
Actually, in terms of 2019 releases, actually, it turns out I've got nothing.
Yeah, no.
Oh, well.
Okay, fair enough.
I tried. That looks like we've basically wrapped it up for this particular episode. It's raining here, and it's gross. We've got to leave our little cozy cubby hole with the heater. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you whenever the next one happens. You have a great holiday if this comes out around that time. See you later.